He's always sitting with you. You sit with me.
Okay, okay.
Hello.
Yeah, we're going to start it off.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Jose Solis from Pod Matters. And Julianne, I was making a joke about how if I grabbed this and save and the end of the affair, it's like the most depressing Julianne Moore getting sick trilogy. So
I do comedy too.
So I was wondering how Sarah and particularly Carol had in any way informed Alice.
I tend not to think that way. You know, I think that sometimes when you're looking at somebody's career and writing about something, you know, you look for threads and you look for references and stuff. But believe it or not, as actors, because we're freelancers, we literally go from job to job. So it's like you've made a movie and then you make the next one. And especially when you're referencing like things that you made 10 years ago, I barely remember 10 years ago. You know. So often people will remember things in my movies and lines. People will quote lines, and I'm like, what's that? poor Michael Angarano. Do you guys know Michael Angarano?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. He's so great. He's so funny, and he's so cute. And we were doing this little comedy called The English Teacher, and we had to kiss in it. And so he told the story, I guess, like on Letterman or something, and we kissed, and we said, was that sexy? And I went, yeah, Michael, that was great. You were terrific. Thanks a lot. And he said he wanted to die of embarrassment because he was quoting a line from Boogie Nights. And I thought,
oh,
Kevin, it's so good. Oh,
my God, that's so
great.
I know.
So, but back to being serious about your question, I think that everything you do as a person, everything you do as an actor informs your work. It all ends up. But it's not really as direct as you might think. But of course, it's just like life. It's all about cumulative.
Sure. Hi, Stephen Shaver here for the Boston Herald. I'd like to ask the actors, you know, what was your reaction when you got this script? Because obviously a movie about a woman with Alzheimer's is not what you call going to be a big box office movie. People are going to say, oh, it's going to be depressing.
I don't know.
And even though it's a fantastic film, you know, what is your reaction when you see that? And does that factor in when you want to say yes, regardless of the part?
Can
you
start?
Kristen?
In this particular situation, typically, no. You know, the experience of doing something is always what drives you into it. I mean, if you're doing it for the reasons that we do, and I know these three women quite well, as actors. It's definitely morbid, and it's not like a walk in the park. But sometimes with film, like, it's not just about... it sounds silly, but it can be very important. And I knew for a fact, as soon as I knew that Julianne was playing this part... I knew that she was going to do something important. I knew that this movie was being made so she could do that, that it would say something. And, it was intimidating thinking that it was our job to just hold her up. And considering, you know, I think there's a possibility that the only reason I felt completely driven and confident walking into it was because Wash and Rich hired me. And, you know, they know an aspect of the story unlike anyone that I have ever met. So I felt like if they thought that I could do it, then I could. And it's not always about having fun and like making people laugh and like, you know, going to the movies to like have a great time. They can really say something, and I think this movie does.
I feel the same way. I read the book before the script, and I would imagine almost everyone in this room has someone who has been affected by Alzheimer's. And so when I read the book, and I have grandparents who have Alzheimer's, and you know, we rally as a family to take care of them, and so it touched me deeply. And I felt like this was an opportunity to shine a light on this disease in a way that it hasn't been done cinematically before. So that was a real draw for me, and also, you know, being able to work with Julie. You know, I've known her for a few years, but I never had the opportunity to work with her, and I really just wanted to sit and watch her do, you know, what she's done. And it's just really spectacular, and, you know, just to be around her and watch and learn and be a part of the whole process and be a part of the message, as Kristen said, is what was important to me.
I did it for the money.
No, I'm sorry.
It was such a great script. It was such a wonderful, wonderful script, and such a beautiful book that Lisa wrote. And what she did is so remarkable is that she presented the disease completely subjectively. What would it feel like? What does it feel like to go through this process? We never get to see that. And Rich and Wash took that novel and made it cinematic in a very, very deceptively simple way, I think. And it was a thrill to be involved in something like that. And I think that's what attracted us to it, the very human nature of the story and that idea that you're watching an individual and a family's kind of journey through this very difficult situation.
It's interesting when you have the story that if you know for a fact that if it is done right, that it's going to be something and everyone's going to talk about it. And if it's done badly, it wouldn't. Do you know what I'm saying? The alternative is so polarized. So you're like, oh, it's worth it, because if we do it right, then it's going to be, you know, more important than anything we've done in a long time.
We didn't want Stellaris to be a depressing movie. It deals with something very intense and very difficult, but we wanted always to shine a light on the human, the possible connections that people can make, even in the most difficult times, which I think gives the film something just, you know, very powerful to say about what it means to be alive.
And I think even through the tragedy, like what I loved watching the movie was the comedic moments that happened, because truly, you know, that's so human. You know, I take care of my grandmother with my parents, and there's some moments that you kind of can't tell. It's such a nice edge of whether it's tragic or absolutely hilarious, you know. And like, I feel like that was something, Wash, that you and Richard, it was very important to you to find that kind of humanity in the journey, and Julie as well with Alec. And, you know, there's those moments that I think, you know, make it very real.
Hi. First of all, congratulations to Julianne Moore for the Golden Globe.
Thank you very much.
Okay. I have a question is for Wash and Lisa. The collaboration in regards to adapting this for a film and working on set, what was it like? Was it a lot of give and take, or expansion, or go with this theme, or whatever?
Well, I would just say, often when you get a situation where a book is adapted, there's tension between the author and the screenwriter. And we wrote the first draft before we showed it to Lisa, and we were nervous when we sent it off, because, you know, it's her baby, and in a way we were like the foster parents who are bringing the child up through another stage of its life. And Lisa's response was immediately just incredibly positive, supportive of what we'd done artistically, and just very helpful in terms of, you know, Lisa's background and knowledge of the whole, you know, terrain of Stellaris, to be able to give very great target feedback. And the process continued through successive drafts, and then in production, Lisa came to visit the set, and I think it was a wonderful time. I mean, I think very much enjoyed seeing her book, our screenplay, become flesh through these amazing performances. I think we just felt very in tune all the way through. And that's not just press conference, that is the truth.
Yeah, I feel so incredibly lucky. I know a lot of writers, and the horror stories you hear of what those people did to the book, none of that applies to this. And so, I mean, I understood from the beginning, and I feel really lucky that I had the consciousness to realize that this is not my project. This is not supposed to be the book. This is a movie inspired by this story. And so I made it clear to Richard and Wash from the beginning that I know I'm not steering the ship, and this is your creative project, not mine, and yet if I can facilitate or support anything that you're trying to do, please ask me. I'm here for you with whatever you need. And so I'm very lucky in that the script that you sent to me was wonderful, and it did It was incredibly respectful to the story, and it was incredibly respectful to the subjective point of view of Alice. We were still, they got why the book was special, and that it wasn't about what the caregivers are going through. And while that point of view is important, we know a lot about that. What's so baffling and heartbreaking and difficult to understand is what is the point of view of someone with Alzheimer's as they descend further and further into dementia. And they were committed to staying in that point of view. And so it was easy to support what they were doing because they were doing such a magnificent job.
Yeah, that was one of the challenges because the book is from inside Alice's head, of how to put the audience member watching the movie inside Alice's head, how to create that total subjectivity. So you're with her and you sort of breathe with her and go through all her tensions and the disappointments and her triumphs with her. And so that was one of our main challenges when we brought the book to screen. And the other one was what to leave out. Ultimately, a book takes, you know, 16, 18 hours to read if you're a slow reader like me. And it's a lot of time for events to unfold. When you're watching a movie, it's a much shorter span of time. And I think some adaptations try to cling on to too much. You've got to be quite disciplined to get to the core of the story in a way that it becomes a cinematic experience that works.
Yeah, this is a question.
Uh-oh. I saw that happen.
That was hysterical. That was amazing.
Hi, Julianne. So if you reached out to any of Alzheimer's organizations, and how has this movie impacted you, your thinking afterwards?
Boy, did I ever. I knew nothing about Alzheimer's. I think was one of those rare people who really hasn't had any contact with the disease, haven't known anyone personally. So I started one of our producers, Elizabeth Galvin-Stearns, who's head of Judy's Fund, and she told me about her experience with her mother and her grandmother, and then the National Alzheimer's Association set me up with 3 Skype calls with women who have been diagnosed with what they call younger onset or early onset. They'd all been diagnosed within, you know, a few years, and talked to them about their experiences. And from there, I went to Mount Sinai, and I talked to Dr. Marie Sano, who's the leading clinician and researcher there, and then had a neuropsychiatrist administer all the cognitive tests, which were fascinating. And then they sent me to the New York Alzheimer's Association, where I met with women who were in support groups, who actually supplied a lot of dialogue for me. There were certain specific things they said that I then told Rich and Wash, and we tried to incorporate them into dialogue. And then from there, I went to a long-term care facility and spoke to the patients and caregivers and family members. And I watched every single doc that was out there and just kind of immersed myself in it. And the great thing about Rich and Wash, too, is that I didn't want to do anything on camera that I actually hadn't seen, because I didn't feel like I had the authority, you know? I didn't know what it was. And so that whenever there was a time when I was unclear about something, I would check on the behavior with someone. There was one time, actually, when I talked to Dr. Sano and a dermatologist there, and they said, no, that's actually an age-related behavior. It's not an Alzheimer's-related behavior. And so you had to be just specific in everything. And people were so, I think, happy and excited that we wanted to know and that we were trying to get it right, that they really, really extended themselves. And there's one woman I'm still friends with, Sandy Olds, who was diagnosed at 45. I spent her 50th birthday on our set, and she's been very, very helpful. She would email me if there was something that she thought that I needed to know. And people with Alzheimer's don't feel seen, I think, a lot of the times because we look the other way, because it's hard to look at, you know? And they feel like there's some kind of a shame attached to cognitive decline. Whereas it's easier, let's just say I wish I had cancer, it's easier for people to say, like, look, this is what happened to me. Mm-hmm. But somehow with cognitive, there's a great deal of shame involved. So it was great to have the experience of these people and their help behind me, you know, and I really owe a lot to all of them.
Can I add to something really quick?
Okay.
So, I love what you just said. So, you know, it's not like cancer is now, where people own up to cancer and they wear the looped ribbons and go for walks and we rally behind and support people with cancer. But that wasn't always the case. Do you remember, 30, 40 years ago, people said cancer in hushed voices and it was called the big C?
Right.
And nobody talked about it. And there was so much shame and stigma. And then something changed, and we have all the loop ribbons and the walks, and not coincidentally, with that kind of attention, has come tons of research dollars, and we have treatments for cancer, and we have cancer survivors. And so one of the things, the importance of a film like this, truly, is, you know, what I've been doing on a smaller scale with the book, and now is going to be in a much bigger way, is dragging Alzheimer's out of the closet and into the movie theaters now, where people can have a... they can be seen and heard,
yeah.
Because people with Alzheimer's don't feel seen and heard, and we're not talking about this thing that exists. And so it's awfully hard to cure something if it doesn't exist. And so this is a way of bringing the conversation to people and saying it's okay to talk about this, it's okay to say that you have it. And so this is huge.
Do you remember when the Flamingo Kid, Jessica Walter, there was a dinner conversation and she would say, oh, did you hear about so-and-so? He has cancer. And it's literally, people were making a joke in that movie about the way we used to treat that disease.
It's true. And so that's what people have been doing with Alzheimer's. And now they will see Still Alice and see a vivid depiction of a woman who is not an elderly person in end stage dying in a hospital bed. Because that's what a lot of the sort of mental pictures around Alzheimer's have been.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is now, what does living with Alzheimer's look like and feel like?
Hi, that was actually my question. I can come up with other questions. But in the movie that, like you said, wish I have a cancer, and it kind of sums up like a really slow deterioration, how eating away the people is. But what I like about this movie is how actually the family support that you can get, like all of a sudden, it's really amazing how they show that. And I was wondering that when you at the organization, how much did you take away from the family element that's so like supportive in a way that it's like you never felt that way, you know, previously. Did you take away any of the element from the organization?
What people told me was that everybody's different. And that some families are very supportive and are there, you know, and then some families are not or refuse to acknowledge it. One woman told me that her children refuse to acknowledge that she has Alzheimer's. They just will not acknowledge it. Another family talked about how the father wouldn't acknowledge it, and then the kids didn't know what to do. And, you know, so every family dynamic is completely different. Every friendship is different. People say that sometimes they're surprised by who disappears and who sticks around. And I think we sort of play that in the movie where you see one daughter who you'd expect to be the one who stuck around not be able to take it because of her own diagnosis, and another daughter who seems like she's, you know, already left, come back and be able to handle it. You know, so we, and then the marriage too, you know, I mean, it was interesting to me, and Alec was so incredibly compassionate in his performance. You see how much he loves his wife and how he says he's going to be there, and then at the end of the day, he can't. You know, it's like he can't be with that, he wants to be with the other wife, the wife that, you know, his old partner. So I think every dynamic is completely different.
Certainly, my co-director, Richard, has ALS, and one of the things that we found in our lives was some people would just get more distant, and no one ever said anything nasty or mean, but people would reprioritize, whereas other people, friends, would come forward and be really emotionally present for you. So we wanted to create within the family dynamic a situation where people's absence meant as much as their presence.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting if you see how that works with the family members throughout the film, that Lydia's character is the one who's initially antagonistic and on a different coast and kind of absent at the initial birthday dinner, but comes through her mother in the end. Whereas John, who is, you know, in love with his wife, it's a marriage of the minds, struggles constantly with dealing with the disease and ultimately takes this decision that makes him more absent. And then I think it's really fascinating, Kate's character, Anna, is someone who has the gene that, you know, that will lead to Alzheimer's, becomes absent after that for a while. She can't deal with her mother, and when she comes back, there's clearly problems she's having dealing with her mother. But ultimately, when she has her baby, there's a feeling that a new relationship can start between them again because the genetic link has been broken for the next generation.
Right. Yeah.
So we're very conscious of absence and presence of family members in the way the story evolves.
I have time for one more question.
All right, I'll just speak a little loud then. Julianne, you've been known to immerse yourself in roles. And I was just wondering, was there any particular scene that you felt that where it was probably the most challenging for you in this movie, and when you saw it for the first time, that maybe some elements surprised you, and also to Kate and Kristen. What about your characters did you relate to the most when it came to maybe their decision on whether or not they had the hereditary gene?
That was most challenging. You know, that might have been the most challenging scene, actually, when we had that family scene where Alec and I were supposed to give the news. Because, you know, she's not in a place where she's, you know, she's not declined. She's just been diagnosed. So she is kind of, you know, she's very present. She's very articulate. But then how do you give that news to anybody? And then how... You know, as someone who's dealing with the effects of the disease on themselves, and then they're worried about their children, they're worried about their children's diagnosis, they're worried about their relationship, we're worried about how the scene started, mm-hmm. how it ended. That was probably the most difficult day. And I guess I think we figured
it out. Yeah, we did. It was tough because, you know, you're dealing with a bomb going off. It's like a silent bomb that goes off in that family, in that room, and it's really about how people are stunned and how people initially respond emotionally. And it was different for each character, and it took a lot of working out just to get that emotional tone right, of just stunned, but just like, this is what we have to deal with now.
And you didn't shoot chronologically, so?
We didn't shoot chronologically. We would have loved to shoot chronologically, but that's a privilege for budgets bigger than ours. We tried within the house, because we were in the Howland home for the first 8 days, to have some of the more difficult scenes pushed at least to day three.
Yeah.
But it was really... there were a lot of other determining factors around the way we could schedule it. The amazing thing is, when it's cut together, how well calibrated the developments in Alice's character are through the decline. It's not just a straight line, it's like a ups and downs as she descends, which is, I think, very authentic to the experience of living with Alzheimer's.
And just really quickly, Kate and Kristen, how much you relate to?
Yeah, I'd say that day was, I think that was a challenging one for everybody, just trying to figure out the tone of the scene. And for my character, you know, I felt like she, Anna was Alice's kind of mirror. You know, they know each other shorthand, they're very, very close. And so I think I had the line that said, are you sick? You know, everyone's kind of guessing, like, are you divorcing? What's happening? Like, kind of joking around, and then my character kind of hones in and kind of figures it out. I think my character, I wanted her to feel the most vulnerable there, and then kind of close up throughout the film, not being able to handle her own fate of having the gene, and how does that relate to her relationship with her mom, and watching her mom decline, knowing that's how she's going to decline, and just having to shut off from that quite
she's
a bit.
Mother too.
Right. So I would say that was probably, at least for me, the most challenging day as well.
All right, guys, we got to wrap.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Know she had the gene. Did you relate to that at all, or did you think that was something that you could relate to?
Personally, I do relate to it. You have two starkly different representations of people in the Howland girls, and you know, Lydia finds that she actually has so many aspects of her mother, and they've, you know, because of this little, you know, fast-forward, accelerated period of life, they're able to find that quickly and level with each other and appreciate each other. But at first, you have a girl who does not want to nail anything down. Conversely, she wants to put, if you can't find a name for something, you can't understand it or define it, then it is expelled from your mind. Whereas, you know, Lydia is, you know, not isolated or like, you know, a black sheep or anything like that, but just different from her family. She's not an academic. She lives in ambiguity. She is a creative person. She's experiential. Every moment is appreciated. Or, you know, even if, basically I'm saying I wouldn't want to know. I think that,
you can still be happy knowing. I just think that it's about, I mean, one other thing that this movie is very much about is, like, present moment leading you and not being stifled and just ruined by projecting and reflecting too much. And, it's kind of why Lydia stands up and becomes somewhat of a backbone. And it's weird because it's, like, counterintuitive. She's flimsy. She's sort of like, oh, I don't know. But then she actually ends up being emotionally, you know, the strongest for her. And, learns a lot.
The end.
Kristen, I saw the Asayas film, and you at the New York Film Festival, and it was so fantastic. And I wonder if after a big franchise like you had, do you feel like you have to sort of rebrand yourself as an actor now? Redefine yourself?
Gosh, luckily I'm so truly driven by experience and by my gut. I don't tactfully maneuver through anything. So at this point, I'm just doing what inspires me and what I love, and it's falling off the truck the way that you see it.
Okay. Great work. Thank you.